think about all the kinds of people that we can hire, right? I think it's so valuable to think about so many different kinds of humans, right? Think about racial diversity, think about socioeconomic diversity, think about skill set diversity. Also consider neurodiversity and disability. It's often something we don't talk about, but it really can provide so many benefits for your workforce.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This isn't just a podcast, my friends. It's a front row seat to how elite leaders build iconic teams, the kind of leaders who spot potential others overlook, who build cultures people don't want to leave, and who set the bar and then raise it. Work and how we work is evolving at a rapid pace like no time in our history. Our guests will give you insights on how to stay out in front when it comes to leadership, management, artificial intelligence, and developing the skills that actually matter. Whether you're a founder, a hiring manager, or just obsessed with building the right way, this is your spot. If it's your first time here, welcome. Hit that subscribe button, drop a rating, and tell a friend who gets it. And to our longtime listeners, we appreciate you. Now let's get to today's guest. Today, we are joined by somebody very special. Tara May is the CEO of Aspiratech, a pioneering tech company that creates meaningful employment, training, and career paths for autistic and neurodivergent professionals. A 25-year veteran of digital transformation, she blends tech leadership with cultural change, building scalable QA, cybersecurity, and skills programs that prove inclusion drives measurable performance. A tireless neurodiversity advocate, Tara partners with national initiatives and community programs to make Aspiratech a global model for how businesses can tap often overlooked talent while improving outcomes for both people and organizations. That was a mouthful. Tara, how are you doing?
I'm always wonderful. How are you?
I'm so great. You are giving me life. You are giving me energy. I appreciate you being here. Did we do an okay job with the introduction?
That was extraordinary. I loved it.
So Tara, I want to jump into it. You know, you and I connected. We got to talk a little bit. I have four children. My son is neurodiverse. He's 6 years old. He's the light of my life. I know that you have a child that I think is a little bit further on in the journey. I think 13 or 14 years old. Is that correct?
14, and yes, autistic neurodivergent.
I love that. And I'm excited to talk about it. I'm excited to share. I'm excited to learn a little bit. But I want to start here before we get into that. I want to discuss the entrepreneurial journey. I'm very interested. What was maybe your aha moment starting your own company? And I'm also interested since, you know, you've been relatively doing this for, I wouldn't say a short amount of time, but this is relatively something that's been going on only recently. What's kind of surprised you about being a founder that you didn't know going in? Because it's always that we all got a plan until we get punched in the mouth, and nothing punches in the mouth like being an entrepreneur. So let us know about your journey and that story.
Yeah, absolutely. So the credit where credit is due goes to the true founders of the organization. There are a couple named Brenda and Moshe Weitzberg. They founded Aspiratech when looking for meaningful work for their adult autistic son and couldn't find it anywhere. So they said, well, we're going to make it. We're going to create it. So from their kitchen table, they founded Aspiratech in 2008 based on a model out of Denmark that was training autistic adults in QA. And as they reached into their 70s, they were looking for a succession plan. They wanted to hand over the organization. So I was the lucky chosen one by the board of directors to become CEO of this amazing, unique company. And I think what they truly built, and they didn't even necessarily know it, was not a QA and tech company, but it was a workplace where autistic people could thrive. And so I got the privilege of taking on that legacy. And I think, you know, what surprised me the most was taking it over. It still was like a brand new organization, right? It was still a founder's journey and it was still entrepreneurship. And it was amazing coming from the corporate world where there was someone to do everything, someone to do HR, someone to do accounting, someone to do sales and marketing. And in startup mode, none of that exists. You are everything all the time. And you have to build around infrastructure to scale on. And to me, that was both the most challenging and most exciting part of building a company.
I love that. And that's why I asked. I appreciate you giving us the details on the story. So what has fundamentally changed since you took over? Is there different services? Has there been rapid growth? Like, help me understand what is new since you—
Yeah, rapid growth, right? I mean, the founders had one customer that the organization was really built around. And well, that was wonderful and it was growing and crazy. That's not a sustainable business, right? So my imperative was really to diversify the business, both in terms of the services that we do, the way revenue was coming in, and the clients that we had. So fast forward just about a little over two years, we now have 75 clients instead of one major client. We grew from 1 million to about 3 million in revenue aside from that client, a total of 6 to 7 million. And we expanded our services very significantly. So we went, in addition to QA, into large language model building, cloud migrations, accessibility testing, and now cybersecurity. So it has really been a model in growing both capabilities and clients, which is exciting. I love it. Never a slow day.
That's amazing. It's something that I can sense and feel your passion. It's something I'm very passionate about. Here in South Florida, I've been working with a couple of different people at some of the larger organizations out here, particularly in their technology department, on how do we get neurodiverse people to work? How do we get them supported? How do we enable them and have these programs in place? So my question for you is, because I'm still learning, and so I'm going to ask a curious person that we
do it.
Do companies usually come to you inbound? Is there a lot of outbound? Is it education? Like, how do you kind of grow the overall base of potential customers with something that's some very unique service? And I'm interested to know how that works.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I would say in the beginning, it was a lot of inbound. And what I mean by that is somebody like yourself who has a tie to the mission, there's a passion, there's a reason why you care about neurodiversity and employment. And then as we became really established and really touting the services that we provide more so than the mission, even the outbound sales and marketing strategy increased significantly. And so the mission certainly opens doors, right? But it's our proven model and the incredible work of our team members who earn every penny of their paychecks that keeps customers coming back in a services model. Right. I think we went from mission driven to quality driven, and the two go really hand in hand together.
I love that. And then what about from the candidate side? How do you engage different parts of the community? How like, do people come to you? Is it at events? Like, how do you get these really talented, neurodiverse technology professionals to be part of the organization?
I love that question because it gives me a chance to state what a big problem we have today here in the U.S., which is that the under and unemployment rate for autistic people is often cited at around 80%. That is a lot of people. And it is not because of intelligence or capability or talent. It's because, well, it's primarily because of the interview process hurdle, right? Autistic people often struggle with social issues, with eye contact, with new environments. And those are all really critical pieces of interviewing that might not have anything to do with your ability to contribute a wonderful value set to a workplace, right? So we're all about removing those hurdles and barriers and stigmas and opening up a path for autistic people to share their talents in the workplace.
I love you bringing that up. That is such an interesting insight there. I was talking recently, I think I even posted about it recently, on that how somebody shows up in the interview a lot of times is almost never indicative of what kind of professional they're going to be. And the example I was using was, when people interview with me, a lot of times they see CEO, they see founder, and sometimes they're nervous. And I've had to train myself to look beyond things that would be typical with nervousness to try to see the individual. In fact, what I try to create an environment where they feel more comfortable, right? And so I can only imagine for somebody autistic and neurodiverse, right? They don't have a lot of the same social cues that we learn and that comes with, you know, our growth, right? And that doesn't mean that they can't be really excellent at the job, many times more excellent than somebody that has some of those more, you know, traditional kind of like social awareness skills. And so I think that's a really great call out. Is there something you'd recommend for companies that to maybe create a better interviewing environment that they can kind of alleviate some of that concern? Or is it training them to look at more important things? Or is it async technology testing? Like, what would you just recommend for a company that's like, you know what, that is a problem. How do we get better about this?
Yeah, so we have a few strategies that we recommend, and they're really easy to implement. The first thing is to just be aware of it. So I was speaking to a group of CEOs a few months ago who were lamenting the talent pipeline around tech and AI specifically, and automation. And one of the things I said to them was, well, what are you looking for? When someone walks in the door, what are the skills you want to see when you're interviewing them? You're the hiring manager. And one of the CEOs so kindly got up and demonstrated for me that he is looking for eye contact and a firm handshake and the ability to articulate their job skills. And I said, well, what does that have to do with being an LLM coder, right? Like, nothing. So to me, one of the most important recommendations is to have your interview process allow people to showcase the talents and the skill sets that they're actually going to be using on the job, and not necessarily their ability to sell themselves, unless you're hiring a salesperson, in which, of course, like, charisma and eye contact and firm handshakes matter, right? So if you're hiring for someone to work on a complex data set, maybe you're giving them a sample to showcase what they're capable of. Maybe you're bringing them in for a day, which we often do at interviews, and allowing them to show you. Walking around in a tour can be a great way for a technical person to all of a sudden be asking questions that show their know-how, right? But none of this has to do with sitting down and having a 15-minute conversation where they articulate how good they are at things. So it's just a lot of small things you can do. Another example, we provide interview questions up front. Well, a lot of our neurotypical people absolutely love that because they've had time to prepare their answers. They've had time to be thoughtful. If you have a different processing speed, this allows you to gather your thoughts, perhaps even write them down if written communication is sort of your jam. So there's a lot of small things you can do to help the interview assess the skill set rather than the personality.
And here's one of the best byproducts of what you just said. You actually have a higher correlation of knowing how they will perform in their job by watching them perform the duties of the job, or have an understanding of the actual skills that matter for the job. And you know what the irony of what you said is? I was just talking about this with somebody today. You know, we have a software called Aon that a lot of the big use cases around, from an interviewing perspective, is account executive, account manager, sales hires. Do you know why? Because there's actually a pretty low correlation on a sales hire because they're so charismatic in the interview, they do such a great job. And then they start working for you. You're like, well, wait a minute, what happened? Like, this isn't the same thing. It's actually being good at interviewing, even if those are the qualities of the job, is actually a very poor correlation actually being successful in the job. Because when it comes to being a salesperson, sure, you want to have somebody charismatic and charming and all that good stuff. But, you know, can they use a CRM? Can they keep organized? Can they ask the right questions? Can they be an engaged listener? These are actual qualities of a great salesperson in a lot of the cases.
That's a great point, Oz. You're making me rethink my example, right? Because you're right. Like, you have automated email sequences. Are they going to be able to do that in 2025? Keeping track of everything in Salesforce, pipeline monitoring.
That's the net of this at the end of the day, is that a lot of times the what you learn in the interview is not applicable to what needs to be done in the job. And so you've got to go deeper and you've got to work harder and you've got to understand your job better to better identify people. And it's not just about giving an opportunity to somebody neurodiverse, it's about hiring the best person for the job. And you can do that and have truly meritocratic hiring by just being a little bit smarter about the way that you conduct your interview process. I love everything you're saying. Can you tell me some misconceptions of maybe people might have about neurodivergent adults in the workplace? Maybe some examples of where you've seen a neurodivergent professional excel, where maybe somebody neurotypical would not?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple really fun examples. I sort of spend my life entrenched in this, so I could go on and on, but I will not, I promise. So here's one stereotype. We are a tech company and tech is our jam, but not all autistic people are limited to tech and highly detailed focus work. In fact, some of our best people are so brilliantly artistic and creative that we launched a creative services line, and we have a fantastic partnership with the San Diego Museum of Art. We have these beautiful artists on our team. One of them flew out to San Diego as part of this project and collaboration and was doing a painting with the CEO of the museum. So, like, what an incredible and fun example. We do a major data annotation project with the TSA, with the Transportation Security Administration. Some of our team members are so highly visual that they were able to pick up the data annotation of the imaging process that was building the large language model for TSA to automate their security, that our team was able to learn in 3 months how to annotate images faster than people who had been doing it for 10 years. To me, it's like, we don't need to stereotype autistic people. They're humans with different strengths and weaknesses. But when you can pair someone's strength and passion with a business need, magic happens. And that's true for all of us, right?
I love that. I love that. Great call out by you. I'm interested. So my son's six, but like, you know, let's say he's 16, 17, 18 one day. Okay. And I think.
And he will be before you know it.
For sure. For sure. And they all, you know, I got three other children too, and they grow like weeds. But what I'll tell you is that, you know, sometimes just like the professional systems in place have had failings on neurodiverse children, right? So has education. So let's say that I wanted my son to get in technology, or I wanted him to learn QA, is that something that Aspira Tech can help with too? Or is it more, they're more fully formed in terms of their skill set when they come to you?
No, absolutely. So interestingly enough, even though it's imperfect, there are way more support in place in preschool and K through 12 than ever before. But as soon as you graduate from high school, they're gone. They're done, and they don't exist in the rest of the world. And that's one of the things that Aspira Tech seeks to change, right? We want workplaces to also be supportive environments that think about people's needs and that there's a return on investment for that kindness, right? So that's one point I would make. The second point I would make is that Aspira Tech has an incredible academy. It is absolutely free for autistic participants to train for careers in QA and cybersecurity and other tech fields. And what we do is we teach the hard skills right alongside the soft skills, which for autistic people can sometimes be the harder piece, actually, and prepare them for the workforce. So if there are parents or autistic job seekers that are listening, the academy is a great place to start.
How amazing. What's amazing? Company and service you offer and provide, not just for the neurodiverse, but also for the companies, because I think that's it'd be a shame to look past what you're really doing to help them and help them get great talent at the organization that a lot of times is being done at a much higher and more efficient level than they might find with somebody maybe neurotypical. So I love everything you're doing. I want to bring it a little closer to home. Let's talk a little bit about your 14-year-old. What can you tell us about, it's your son, right?
It's my youngest son. He's my baby. You can hear him stimming in the background. He's a happy Zoom stimmer. He is absolutely the light of my life. He was born autistic. You're born and you are autistic or neurodivergent every step, every day of your life. But we didn't know it until he was five. He was pre-verbal until he was seven. Now a thriving 14-year-old in three honors classes.
Wait, did I hear that right? He was nonverbal until seven?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And you can imagine that's some tough years as a parent, right? Because you're figuring out how to communicate with each other other ways. I mean, I could tell when he squeezed my hand how anxious he was or what he needed, but it took us some years to figure that out. And I think, you know, it was in that journey that I fell in love with the concept of neurodiversity, because you really learn that all of us, we all have different brains, right? We have 86 billion neurons firing in our brain, and they impact everything about the way we experience the world, how we walk through it, how we communicate, how we learn, how we socialize, who we love, everything. And his brain experienced the world so uniquely. It opened my eyes to a completely new way of thinking. And I figured out a lot about myself as a mother. I relearned how to be a mother. And I also learned that he was capable of absolutely anything if he had the right supports. And that starts to help you look at the world differently. I'm sure you feel the same way about your son. I'm sure he helps you look at the world differently.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
I'm going to open up a little bit and share and be vulnerable. And to be honest, this is not for as public of a life as I have on LinkedIn and social media and being on this podcast. I have not shared much about this, but this is absolutely the perfect form to do so. So I will now. And I had a couple of people ask me, you know, they know I have three daughters that I, you know, one of them was an intern here recently and we went on trips and things like that. And somebody asked me, why haven't you posted about your son? My thought was, it feels exploitative to make that the center of something with the thought of like cheap likes or engagement. That's not why I'm doing any of this. I want to be very authentic to myself. And maybe at the right time, in the right scenario, I'd bring it up in a more public part of it. But I think the way that, so let me kind of bring you back a little bit. So I'm the only one with my last name, long story. I grew up in a half Indian, half German family. Legacy was something that was talked a lot about. So having my name be carried on, everybody from my wife to everybody I knew that was something that was really important to me. And so we had our first daughter, and then we had our second daughter, and we had our third daughter. And then there was a big gap in between, and it was a lot of conversation with my wife and I around, well, do you want to try again? And I know how important having a son is to you. And you know, it was kind of a, you know, difficult, like intimate conversation. And ultimately, you know, she was the one that was mostly championing it. So I said, all right, let's do it. And then lo and behold, we had a son. Okay. And son Jackson, he's born. And he's beautiful. He's amazing. He's everything, right? And we actually recognized it a lot earlier, right? We started recognized around 16, 17, 18 months. And he was diagnosed with autism at 18 months. And the initial thought was, I had to reconcile in my head, right? Right away, like, oh, well, this is going to be a little bit different than I kind of had in my mind, right? Initially, right? Not bad, not good, but it's going to be different. And I had to get to that place there. And I think it took my wife even a little bit longer because it's very hard. There's a lot to it. Sometimes you feel very alone. She does a lot of the lion's share of taking care of our family. So I know, especially earlier on, where he'd be frustrated where he couldn't communicate like a kid at his age normally could, right? It was just difficult sometimes being a mother in that situation, especially when I was doing a lot of work. And certainly for myself, a lot of the things that I had like kind of like had an ego about around legacy and, you know, the quarterback of the team and things like that, I had to start to rethink. And then I really got to a really, 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 really great place with it pretty quickly. And it's been this way ever since. The first thing that came to my mind was, okay, we all have expectations for kids, right? We want them to be the valedictorian. We want them to be this. And you know what? Neurodiverse, neurotypical, it doesn't matter. It almost never works out that way. And that's about you. That's not about the kid. And one of the things you learn about as you get older and your kids start to grow is that you just want them to be healthy, happy, and these types of things, not these predetermined thoughts you had. So this is just a different set of different predetermination, right? The other thing was, I'm a big mindset person, right? Once I kind of understand the new normal, I like embrace it, right? And there's so many things about, you know, having my son be neurodiverse versus my neurotypical daughters, that's really special, okay? I'll give you an example, okay? I have a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, and an 11-year-old. My son is so affectionate with me. I'll have like 30, 35-minute hugging sessions, them playing, wrestling. I cannot get my teenage kids to get anywhere near me on that. And one of my love languages is acts of affection, and I get that from him. He serves that for me. Another thing is that I never have to worry about him, you know, being on his screen and not paying attention or going out with his friends and feeling that, like, you know, there's a need there. That's actually kind of like, you know, like great.
He's engaging from another level. Yeah.
It's so it's not like, I'm going to tell you something. My sister has her third child daughter has Down syndrome. I remember, she's much older than me. And I remember when I was like a teenager, she said to me, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. And I remember thinking in my youth, and you got to think that. Of course you got to say that, right? And now I see it, I get it 100%. Not only would I not have it any other way, I am so much of a better person and parent because of my son. And I don't know what the future holds. I don't know any of these types of things, right? But I stopped getting worried about that. I'm living in the moment day to day. There's some really cool things. Like one of the things you realize is that, like, you know, for his first few birthdays, obviously, 4, 5, 6, right? You don't even know he knows it's his birthday, right? You know, he's eating cake and stuff like that. But you realize how much you do as a parent for validation.
It means nothing.
Instead of just doing it because it's the right thing to do and because he's happy in that moment. And I realized, like, you know, my daughter's You didn't say thank you to you for getting your birthday gift.
He doesn't happen with him. It doesn't have to happen. I'm doing it because it's the right thing. I'm doing it because it's it removes all ego. What I didn't realize before my son is that I didn't realize how much ego played a part and your own issues played a part.
It does.
He removes all of that from me. And so he is the happiest kid. And that's another thing. When you just want your kids to be happy, well, he's happy pretty much 95% of the time. He has his moments. But other than that, he's like so happy all the time. And so that's all I want for all my kids. So, and the relationship between his sisters and him is amazing. So anyway, long narrative and soliloquy to say, I really get it. Now I understand. I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm so grateful.
You're giving me chills and goosebumps. And in part, it's because you're bringing me back a decade to all those feelings and emotions that I had too. And they're shared and they're not shared by everyone. We're part of a really, I think, special club, a really unique club. I remember crying. I had just silent tears when my boys are twins and one neurotypical, one autistic. So we're marching off to preschool graduation and my neurotypical son runs off, joins his friends, ready to go on the stage for preschool graduation. And Shauka, my autistic son, he's clinging to me. He won't. And I'm crying. I'm there and I'm like, he's never going to do those things, right? He's never going to be like everyone else. And then in the middle of graduation, the preschool director says, we're going to recognize one graduate who's not up on stage with you. And this kid climbs into my arms and waves to an entire room full of hundreds of people. And it's like, it's me. It's me. And I remember in that moment being like, no, it's not going to be like everyone else. It's not going to be what I expect. It's not going to be him running off to join the other kids. It's going to be its own thing. And that's amazing, right? So when you learn to sort of say, I'm going to enjoy this for exactly what it is, honor it for exactly what it is, changes the game, changes your life.
100%. And listen, every now and then I'll catch myself and there'll be something that's happening that, you know, my friends who have a son their age are doing and stuff like that. And I'll catch myself a little bit. I think that's a really normal thing. But I would tell you the vast majority of the time, I actually wish more people could feel the way I do and experience what I do, because I do think it's made me better. I do think it's made us a better family. And it's a very special and unique love. And you know, even before I had my son, I knew multiple fathers who had autistic sons. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I would be with them in very emotional moments. You could tell that in a lot of ways it broke them. And it was, you know, whether it caused, you know, issues in their marriages or in friendships, or they just were like, woe is me. And before I even had my son, I remember thinking, this will never be me. This is no way for me to identify. It's not worth that. It's not. And focus on what you have, not what you don't have. And I remember thinking that, lo and behold, I was given that blessing. And it's 100% how I've chosen to live my life. And you're absolutely right. It's not better. It's not worse. It's just different. And, you know, both of us are blessed enough to have neurotypical children, too. So we get that experience, too. So it's
absolutely. And there are moments of sweetness that I think neurotypical parents could never understand. When your son is nonverbal, like my son was nonverbal for nearly 7 years, right? The first time he said, I love you, I can still feel that feeling to this day, right? I can feel it in my soul. And I sort of, okay, you're in Florida. You don't know what a spring day feels like in Chicago after we've waited for it for months and months of terrible, horrible winter, but it feels so sweet. And I liken those sort of moments of parenting that you wait for a little bit longer than other people do. It's the same type of thing.
It's a complete perspective flip, because my daughter will come home with a B and I'll be really upset and like, how could you not? And then my son will just do the smallest gain, something. And it's like you said, my heart flutters away. And it's actually good for how I parent the rest of my kids, too, because then I realize, no, you know what? The first reaction wasn't the right reaction. Right. So I'm with you. I'm so glad we got to share this. Like I'm so excited that you came on and we could talk about it. And quite frankly, I haven't really had the opportunity to share it. So I'm excited that we got a chance to do that and talk
about it. I feel honored that we got to have this conversation today.
I guess we can talk a little bit about hiring, but I want to really kind of push it towards kind of the neurodiverse side in particular. So let's talk about a couple of things, right? What are some of the things that a company can do to create a more inclusive, supportive environment? Let's say that you're working at a place that's decided to hire somebody neurodiverse, or maybe a program just got started. What can any individual do to help with inclusion, to help create an environment? What are some things to think about for that person?
Yeah, first, just even talking about it is huge, right? I mean, when we think about all the kinds of people that we can hire, right? I think it's so valuable to think about so many different kinds of humans, right? Think about racial diversity, think about socioeconomic diversity, think about skill set diversity. Also, consider neurodiversity and disability. It's often something we don't talk about, but it really can provide so many benefits for your workforce. So first, think about it, right? Then your hiring practices and interview practices, right? As an HR organization, even just do a little bit of Googling about neuro-inclusive hiring practices. That can go a really long way. Thirdly, your environment, right? Autistic people and neurodivergent people can be very sensitive to their environment. And there are so many quick and easy things you can do to create sensory-friendly workplaces and environments, quiet spaces, allowing headphones, eliminating distractions, even thinking about color and arts in your workplace will open up brains and creativity. So those are wonderful tools you can use. And then communication, 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 communication all day, every day. I think the best leaders are strong communicators. And if you're thinking about auditory learners, visual learners, and providing your communication in multiple formats, that is going to be so wonderful for everyone, but is especially critical for neurodivergent people.
Love that. Great insights, tactics. I hope people are taking notes. That's some great stuff there. What about, I imagine you have a really positive story, a memorable interview experience, right? For maybe one of the people on your team or something. Can you think of anything that you want to share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will share with you that we once interviewed with a person who chooses not to speak out loud. Now, I think it's a combination of their verbal skills and their social preferences, but we did the entire interview via chat. And first of all, their answers were so thoughtful, so profound, so detail-oriented that I was like, I want to hire this person immediately. I mean, I was thinking about their follow-up emails, their ability to communicate on Slack, which we're a Slack company, but whether it's Teams, Slack, or Google Chat, doesn't matter. It's the same skill set. And I was like, this person is going to knock it out of the park. We never spoke a single word.
See, goes to show you. I love that. All right, what frustrates you about current hiring practices? And maybe we can make it about, you know, what are some things, and I know you mentioned a little bit like what we're looking at and how the environment's maybe not conducive, but the typical hiring practice is something that is something I've railed against for quite a bit of time. Is there anything
for us, right? Like when I am hired, if someone opens with tell me about yourself, I struggle every single time and I want to stab myself with a fork. Like what? How am I supposed to jam my career and my identity into 90 seconds of opening conversation that you really mean a small talk, right? So to me, you know, I'm going to echo what I said earlier. It's really, let's try to figure out how a person is going to do at the job. That really matters to me. If I'm hiring someone for a metrics reporting job, I want to be able to see how detail-oriented they are and how nerdy they can get in a Google sheet, right? So that is fundamental to neuro-inclusiveness, but also it's just going to get you better people.
That's really, really good stuff. I love that. I'm so glad that we could focus the hiring aspect, because usually we're talking a little more broad-based on core hiring philosophies, but I think this is just so action-packed in terms of insights and things that people can learn about a subject that maybe they haven't really encountered, or maybe they were wondering about but didn't have resources for. You've been amazing on that. I want to take it in a little bit of a different direction. I want to ask you a couple of different things. We like to talk about AI a lot. You mentioned a lot of LLM coders and people working. Well, I'm going to say one thing I believe. And again, I'm going to open up here. I'm very deep in AI, building AI, reading about it, like everything. I do believe that AI is going to help us make some really big advances in the neurodiverse space and for my son, where things will be very different, if not for it. From every end of, no pun intended, the spectrum, right? Of what could happen, what's possible, and what kind of tools we could use. You tell me about why AI, it sounds like you've seen, hey, this is something that companies are looking for. Are you getting a lot of talent in the AI space? Tell me how you think AI has a chance to kind of influence things for neurodiverse professionals or individuals.
Look, I am a digital transformation girl. Like, that's where my entire career is steeped in digital transformation, starting from me graduating with a journalism degree and turning that into helping legacy print media companies become thriving digital companies. And we've seen a few moments in time over my decades, right? I'm aging myself, but it is true. Over my decades, you know, one was the advent of high-speed internet, where all of a sudden everything, so much was accessible all the time. And then the second was the iPhone. And not only was everything accessible all the time at work and at home, now all of a sudden it was in your hand and you're carrying it around. The third, in my opinion, was COVID, where it became imperative that things happen digitally, right? It was healthcare, it was food ordering, it was absolutely everything. And now I think the fourth is Gen AI. It's a similar sort of paradigm shifting moment. And I believe at these moments, companies can either lean in and embrace it and figure out how to integrate it, or they can get left behind. And fear of it or avoiding it is just going to render them obsolete, right? So at Aspiratech, as a leader, I'm helping us lean in. Now, I think there's a way to do that smartly and strategically. AI isn't for everything. You have to figure out how you're going to use it, what you're going to use it for to strategically advance your business. You're going to have to do that safely and securely and smartly. But it is going to change us endemically, right? Now, with neurodiversity specifically, AI is built on human intelligence and therefore mimics human bias. So I think it's really important for all kinds of people and all kinds of brains and all kinds of identities to be involved in building and shaping AI. So I'm really bullish on that. But for neurodivergent people, especially, I think it has the ability to change the game. If you struggle with executive functioning, now there's an AI note taker. If you struggle with social cues, there's AI that will tell you right now, Oz is engaged with me, he's listening, or Oz is getting angry, you might want to address that. Or Oz is, you know, mind is wandering, you need to cue him back in. That is a huge advancement for autistic people. And those are just two examples of many that can make the workplace so much better and so much more accessible for all kinds of brains. Sorry, that was more of a rant than you wanted, probably. Sorry.
Thrilled that you gave such a detailed and in-depth answer. And quite frankly, I talk to technologists that don't give me such a deep answer on AI. So I love that. Thank you so much for that. All right, last question, then we're going to do our speed round. How long have you lived in Chicago, by the way?
I am 17 years in Chicago now.
This is going to be good. All right. Last question, what's some advice you'd give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then, but that you know now?
You can do it. I think, you know, a woman in her 40s versus a woman in her 20s, the main difference is confidence. Women are so entrenched in imposter syndrome. And by the way, I truly believe that about autistic people too, right? The self-confidence struggles are real. You can do it. You can do absolutely friggin' anything you put your mind to.
Love it. I'm very excited. We are going to do a multiple choice Chicago speed round. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Al's Italian Beef or Portobello's hot dogs?
Hot dogs all the time, all day, every day. I'm a hot dog girl.
White Sox or Cubs?
Cubs.
Jordan or Walter Payton?
Payton.
Wow. More iconic symbol of the city, the Bean or Wrigley Tower?
Wrigley. I'm a Wrigley girl.
Better nickname, Second City or Windy City?
Windy City, duh.
Okay, just making sure.
We're not sucking to anybody.
Lou Malnati's or Giordano's?
Giordano's. I like it pub style.
Most likely to win a championship next, the Bears or the Bulls?
The Bulls.
You didn't know this. Chicago is my favorite city. Now, I only go there between, say, May and right around October. Love the city. I tell people all the time, it's my favorite big city because the people are by far the nicest. Guys and girls, everybody's super friendly.
Better than New York, it doesn't smell. Oh,
I mean, I spent a lot of time in New York. I'm not going to disparage New York. I like Chicago a lot better. But the food scene, incredible, I think, per capita. Because in New York, where I love New York's got a lot of great food. But hear me out, location matters so much there that you can put a place that's kind of subpar, you're going to get foot traffic and you're going to be able to stay alive. That doesn't happen in Chicago. If you don't got great food, it's not going to work. There's just too much competition there. Great cultural scene, architecture is amazing. And if you're there in the summer, the weather is unbeatable. So
the lake.
The lake.
Just like the lake. Here's
one thing you guys got to calm down about. I heard some people calling it the beach. Like, you got to chill out. That's not a beach. That's like a gravel situation you got there. We got the beaches out here in South Florida. But for a Midwestern big city on the lake, the boat out, the boating, like, I'm on it for that. I did the architecture tour and went all the way out there. And the lake is amazing. But the beach, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'm going to go sunbathe out there. That's just me, though.
Yeah, I agree. And I also agree on May to October, right? Like, we are great 6 months out of the year.
Well, the funny thing is, I love Chicago so much. When I was living here in Florida, I was saying, hey, I want to go open up an MSH office. I want to go live there. And I had somebody say, just go visit in January. And so I actually went, took a business trip there in January. And I got to be honest, I was like, you know what? I'm not built for this. I grew up in Southern California, Arizona, and Florida. And I realized, well, I put off more than I could shoot here. Tara, this was a great episode. I know we're going to stay in contact. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing on such an important topic. Thank you so much for coming on.
This was wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Talk to you soon.